This is Raleigh Burley. You're listening to Heart Song on KDNK. This afternoon, I am joined by two very special guests who will be presenting Climate Consciousness and the Indigenous Connection at the 3rd Street Center tonight at 7 p.m. I'm joined by Andrew Cameron Bailey and Connie Baxter Marlowe, here to talk about Indigenous cosmology meets quantum science as presented in their book, The Trust Frequency. So welcome, Andrew, and welcome, Connie.
Hey, it's a treat to be here.
We're thrilled to be here. Thanks for inviting us into the
Haven't
studio
been on
with
KDNK
you.
On KDNK in a while.
No.
Mm-hmm. And you have been before on KDNK?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
We've been rattling cages around here for a long time. So we're happy to be at it again at the 3rd Street Center with our event, Climate Consciousness and the Indigenous Connection.
And this is very much related to your book. When did the book come out?
2012. And actually, its official publication date was December 21st, 2012, that famous date to do with the Mayan calendar, the end of the Mayan calendar. Seemed like a good publication date. So
absolutely.
That's the one we chose.
And especially given the premise of the book, which mm-hmm. is the evolution of human consciousness. The subtitle is 10 Assumptions for a New Paradigm. Could you explain that subtitle? What do you mean by assumptions?
So what's an assumption? An assumption is a belief that we take to be true without ever questioning it, right? That's an assumption. And what's a paradigm? It's just a collection of assumptions. It's an agreed upon consensus reality composed of everything we believe. You could call it a worldview, right? Sometimes we call it a paradigm. People say we need a paradigm shift. Why? Is there anything wrong with the world as it's currently constructed? Because it's based on our beliefs and our understandings. If we'd like a better world, maybe we can shift that paradigm. How do we do that? Change our assumptions.
And we're bringing 10 assumptions for a new paradigm, a construct on the nature of the universe, how the universe works. We feel we're out of balance because we don't understand that. Human carries so much love in its heart. We do. We're just not aligned with that because we have been raised to think that this paradigm is the only game in town. The belief systems that have come to us through science, through the scientific paradigm that we've accepted to be true, and basically a scarcity-based economic system. So we think we have to show up for that, that it's the only game in town. Well, it's not. It's the rules of the game in this frequency, and we're talking about shifting frequencies and how to do that on an individual basis that actually influences the collective so that we can all get to a higher frequency and realize the love in the human heart and the human potential.
So what are a few of these 10 new assumptions to make that might help us in that endeavor?
So the first assumption is that we live in a conscious, loving universe. Now, I'm a science guy. I'm trained in physics and chemistry and mathematics and things like that, and that was not what I was told the universe was. I was educated in the Newtonian science paradigm, where the universe is something like a giant clockwork mechanism that's not alive, doesn't even know I exist. And so what am I talking about, saying the universe loves me? That's crazy stuff, isn't it? However, if we flip that on its head and say we live in a conscious, loving universe, that's a whole different reality to exist within. That's example number one.
Yeah, and the second part of that assumption is there is only love. What we're doing is taking our whole construct beyond duality, beyond right and wrong. Okay, it's huge. We are so stuck in victim, perpetrator, blame, shame. And what until we get out of that into a higher frequency, which is beyond, Rumi says, there is a field out there beyond right doing and wrong doing. I'll meet you there. Mm-hmm. Well, we give a construct that takes us there to understand, indeed, there is only love. And we resolve that paradox because we see so much as not love, and so many of us are in victim, and so, you know, everything we see that's going on even right now, we see as not love. And we resolve that paradox by assumption number two, which says the universe loves us unconditionally, meaning it gives us everything we ask for. It loves us so much that it gives us everything we ask for. What are our requests to that loving universe? That's what we don't understand. And so our assumptions 3 and 4 go into understanding that it is our consciousness that creates our reality. What is our consciousness? We have the 7 A's of consciousness, 7 words that begin with A.
So if you were to go to the dictionary and look up the word consciousness, it would tell you consciousness is awareness. Good, that's true. If you're unaware, if you're unconscious, you're not aware. If you're unaware, you're not conscious. So yes, but there are a lot of other attributes to consciousness, not just merely awareness. That's the bottom line. So we identified 6 other words coincidentally beginning with the letter A, and we call them the 7 A's.
And we actually have those in one sentence. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that in one sentence, the 7 A's of consciousness that we can check on a daily basis whenever we think of it. Okay, what are my 7 A's doing? What is creating my reality? What is creating my vibratory level? It's really just physics. It's not anything to do with good and bad judgment. It's physics. Where am I vibrating at? And we say that these 7 aspects of consciousness determine our frequency, our vibratory level, and in fact are our requests to the conscious, loving, abundant universe. And so that sentence is, with expanded awareness and accurate assumptions, we choose our attitude, consciously direct our attention, take committed action, which is the kicker, the action piece, align with our highest inner promptings, and allow the loving universe to manifest beyond our wildest dreams. Because we can't even imagine what's in that frequency, because it's beyond the conscious mind, because our mind is so stuck in this construct. Yes, but I can't do that because, but. Well, guess what? Once we understand that, there are no buts. It's yes, I am loved, I understand, and I am going for it.
Could you explain a little bit of the journey that brought you to writing this book? What led up to that 2012 publishing date?
Well, I actually did the physical writing of the book. I met this young lady here, Connie Baxter Marlowe from Aspen, Colorado, in upstate New York at a gathering of wisdom keepers, an indigenous gathering at a place called the Omega Institute that some of our listeners will be aware of. And we got to know each other, and I have to confess we fell in love and did all the marvelous things that come along with that. And as we traveled, Connie would be saying things to me that were quite extraordinary. Now, I was maybe 40 years into my, shall we say, spiritual path, where I'd been checking out all the gurus and the consciousness paths and on, all the practices and the yogas and what have you, right? And Connie actually said something unique and different and hitherto unencountered by me. And I kept saying to her, you've got to write a book. You've got to write a book. I probably said that 10 times. And then I realized gradually that she didn't really want to write a book. She wasn't necessarily going to write a book. And I thought the book was really important. So I sat down and started writing this book. And that was probably 2004, 2005. The roots of this book were planted and the first writings began. And then it was a process from, say, 2004 to 2012. That's 8 years. Good heavens. Took a while. With the intention to make it a book not mystical, not woo-woo, not brain-bending stuff that really challenges you intellectually. I wanted to make a pop book, a popular book, something that would be simple, useful, like a toolbox that you can open it up and get real value from it. Things that could actually help any reader, any individual with their lives. And the fact, the fundamental belief is that if we change our assumptions, the world changes with us. So it was about how do we first off examine, become aware of what our unconscious assumptions are, because we get them as little children. We inherit them from generation upon generation upon generation. And then a lot of that stuff is no longer appropriate if it ever was. So it's like a new reality. How can we create a new reality for ourselves? So that's the genesis of the book from my story, and Connie probably has a different take on it.
Well, all that is true. He brought so much to what I had come to understand through my association with the Native Americans. Mm-hmm. And what, because I was looking for the missing pieces of the paradigm as a young person. I knew our paradigm, we weren't, humanity was not acting out of the love that we carry in our heart. And I wanted to know why, and why there were holes in the paradigm that we are basing our lives in. So the answers you get depend on the questions you ask. And I asked the universe, okay, what are the missing pieces of the paradigm? And I looked in Europe, and I looked everywhere in our construct. I couldn't find anything different. And I was in a bookstore in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and picked up a book of Native American poetry. And I'm like, OMG, here it is. There are 500 Indian nations who have the clues, the keys to a different paradigm. And after that, visionary Native elders started coming into my life. And I would bring them here to the valley and say, hey, listen up. Listen to what these people see and know. And I saw what I say as clues to the true nature of the universe. For me, it flipped, the switch flipped. Every word they uttered to me was a clue to the true nature of the universe. It wasn't a belief system. It was actually the pathway to the human heart. It was actually the true nature of things. So I came to understand the conscious, loving, abundant nature of the universe through their cosmology. And then quantum science came into the fore through someone asked me if I'd read the book, The Holographic Universe. Three people asked me. The third person put it in my hands. And I could see what Wallace Black Elk, who was one of the great Lakota elders and a walking phenomenon who came to the valley over many decades I brought him, I could see through this quantum science what he was trying to have us understand. And then what the bleep do we know came in, and I thought, all right, it's time. And Andrew said, you've got to write this book, and he broke it into this whole construct on the nature. He broke it into the 10 assumptions. Mm-hmm. He said, we've got to make it into a one-pager, it's easy to understand. And so he brought that to it and actually wrote the book. So now the mind and heart are opening more fully to what the Native people have to bring. So this event that we're doing, we're weaving a tapestry of ideas so that people can walk away from it with an open mind, an open heart. Hopefully they come with an open mind and an open heart, and we can feed that and catalyze it into a new way of seeing and a new way of being. And so that's the intent tonight, is that we have Anouk Bald Eagle with us, who is a Lakota carrier of his traditions and his knowledge. He speaks Lakota. He actually thinks in Lakota, which becomes a challenge for us, our linear minds, to grok sometimes. And Wallace Black Elk was the same way. And you can see him processing this through his filter of a completely different reality, mm-hmm. which is where the Native people walk in their essence. And so it's going to be very exciting to see what Anouk brings to it. We have presented this in Toronto at the Parliament of the World's Religions with a different Native American, Kevin Deere, who is a Mohawk faith keeper and peacemaker, who is a good friend of ours. And Anouk is a good friend too. And then we have Sally Ranney, who is a visionary environmental strategist and has been for decades, and who wrote the foreword, actually, to the Trust Frequency book, Climate Change Solution, the Trust Frequency. So it's very exciting what we're doing. And we're bringing the Trust Frequency and a meditation for the Trust Frequency. So it's going to be an exciting evening.
For listeners who are just now tuning in, I am joined by Andrew Cameron Bailey and Connie Baxter Marlowe, filmmakers and authors of The Trust Frequency, 10 Assumptions for a New Paradigm, also presenting tonight at 7 p.m. at the 3rd Street Center, courtesy of the Davy Nikent Center for Human Flourishing. Andrew, I understand that you have been working on climate inventions to turn this challenge that is climate change into an opportunity. Could you share a little bit about what your ideas are?
Yeah, I'd love to. So one of the essential elements of turning the climate crisis around is to change the composition of the atmosphere of this planet. Nobody's ever attempted that before. It's a big, big thing to attempt, but it's doable. We have to not only cut down emissions and reduce the amount of carbon dioxide and methane and a lot of other things that we're putting up into the atmosphere, we actually have to begin to actively extract carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And we can do that. It's very simple chemistry. I was trained as a chemist and a chemical engineer, and the chemistry is very simple. I knew it from the age of 14 or so in my young life. The engineering is not complicated. If we can put a man on the moon, this is a whole lot simpler than that. It's just about putting a bunch of machines into operation that will extract CO2 from the atmosphere. That's doable. However, it has to also be profitable, or it won't happen. There are quite a number of operations out there that I'm aware of, and their intention is to capture the carbon dioxide, remove it from the atmosphere, and place it 8,000 feet underground. And I was talking to one of the great climate scientists about that. I said, well, what are you going to do with the CO2 when you've captured it? And he said, we're going to drill an 8,000-foot hole in the ground, and we're going to put it down there, and it will never escape. And I asked this crazy question, where's the return on investment in that? And he looks at me like I was crazy, which I was, because I believe that this will only happen if we can find a way to make this profitable. So investors will look at it and say, whoa, this is actually an opportunity. The great yogi, Yogananda, said, there are no problems, only opportunities. So if we look at it as an opportunity, including a business opportunity, a trillion tons of carbon in the atmosphere can be removed from the atmosphere and put to work for the good of humanity. What can you do with carbon? Well, guess what? You can turn it into concrete. Concrete is mostly carbon. It is calcium carbonate, also known as limestone, crushed rock. So that's one strategy that's being used right now in California. I love it. I respect it. Most of the other ventures capturing carbon are doing it to turn the CO2 into fuel and sell it as fuel, which then just gets burnt and put back in the atmosphere. We're not going to do that. We can turn it into a dozen different valuable, marketable products. My favorite is carbon fiber. Why can you not take the carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and turn it into carbon fiber? I asked that of that scientist, the very scientist. I said, what are you going to do with the CO2? The one who said, we're going to sequester it 8,000 feet underground. And I said, where's the return on investment? And then I said, can I ask you another question? How difficult would it be to take that carbon dioxide and turn it into carbon fiber composite material for 3D printing? And he looked at me and he said, that would not be very difficult. I said, good. I was hoping that would be your answer.
This is an example. Andrew, we've been together on this consciousness track together for the 15 years that we've been together, which is my destiny path, and the role of the Native people in the evolution of consciousness, which our first 50 years project, the one other project we're doing together, exemplifies. And Andrew is just so much more than that. He has diversified into his destiny path, which is what the trust frequency is all about, and that is trusting your inner promptings and acting accordingly. And that's what's happening with him. His genius has kicked in, and his joy and his bliss. You know, Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss. Well, that's what we're each doing on our respective destiny paths.
So since the publication of this book and that fateful day in 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar, what has your experience been? How has the book been received? How has the world surprised you? Where do you find yourselves now?
Well, one thing that's really interesting is that 2020 is sort of the next date after 2012. And 2020 happens to be the 400th anniversary of the landing of the Mayflower. Huh? Okay, and that's our first 50 years project that we've been doing for decades. I've been doing long before I met Andrew, and Andrew joined me, and he's actually written a novel called The Mayflower Revelations. And what's happened with this origin story of this country, it's been basically trashed by revisionist history. And we call it a case of mistaken identity, because everyone is confusing the pilgrims with Columbus, with everything, every ill that's ever happened to the Native Americans since the first 50 years of peace and friendship that occurred between the Mayflower Pilgrims and the Wampanoag Indians, that we're calling the first great synthesis between European colonists and the American Indian, that gave birth to the American mind, spirit, and democracy. It's a whole new story.
Wow.
Because the story has been out of balance ever since the beginning, when it glorified the pilgrims, which they absolutely deserved, what they've taken on for humanity, the leap they took when they defied the king of England, who was an absolute monarch, in favor of freedom of conscience, which is totally native, essential in the native way, is freedom of conscience, to act according to your divine connection to the Creator. And so what we're showing is the similarities between the Mayflower Pilgrims and the Indians. And then we have the second great synthesis, which is when the great law of the Iroquois came into the Constitution. And we're calling now for a third great synthesis with this first 50 years project, that something wants to be born, something new wants to come from this synthesis, this next synthesis with the native people, the indigenous people.
What I really like about what you're doing is, often I've seen in New Age spirituality a marriage between Western ideas, science, and Eastern philosophy. And this is really connecting with the indigenous spirit of the Americas. For me, it's somewhat Southern, because I have connections in South America where this seed is very much alive and sprouting. And to see young people engaged with and inspired by the wisdom that we have thanks to this synthesis, and to see that begin to be ingrained, as you two are suggesting, it could be enough to save us from this climate crisis that we're directing our collective ship towards.
Well, to me, the climate crisis is just that. It's a wake-up call to pull humanity together, to walk into our hearts in honor of the earth, in honor of the sacredness of all life. Because until we do that, we treat it as a resource, we treat it as a commodity, it's just taking us down and treating people as commodities, the whole construct. And that's why we're bringing this trust frequency, this indigenous cosmology, quantum science synthesis.
So we're about out of time, and I'm sure listeners are already quite enticed about the event tonight. Any other details that you would like to give about the format?
So it'll be the four of us presenting. Sally Ranney, the great environmental strategist who lives in Missouri Heights, and Anouk Bald Eagle, a remarkable Lakota Native American elder, and Connie and me. And we'll be weaving a tapestry of interesting and inspiring and indeed hopeful ideas as to how we proceed into the future, both individually and as a species.
And it'll be experiential. We'll do a meditation. Anouk will do some drumming. It won't just be us filling people's heads with ideas. That's an important piece, but important is the experiential, to feel it.
Right.
And so that's what we're designing with this tapestry of ideas.
As we guide with our hearts, important to not only be intellectual, but
exactly.
That's right.
Bring the two together.
Mm-hmm.
Katie and Kay's listening area includes Leadville and Aspen, Glenwood Springs, Marble. For places that are further out, or individuals who for whatever reason can't make it to the event tonight, where can they find more about your work?
So my climate work you can find at sacredearthenterprises.us on the internet.
TheTrustFrequency.net is the website for the Trust Frequency, and first50years.us. You can find more information about the First 50 Years Project. And we also have another website called InSearchOfTheFutureMovie.com. And on that, you can watch our feature-length film on the origin and future of humanity.
And will you bring copies of your book to the presentation tonight?
We will indeed. There will be signed copies of the book. And
Yeah, the Mayflower Revelations, as well as the Trust Frequency.
Wonderful.
And it's not just a novel. It started life as a screenplay, and it's a very interesting film. Mayflower, 400 years ago, it's set in Barbados in the year 2020, so it's a contemporary dysfunctional family story that weaves all this old history and sort of retells the story in a whole new way.
Well, thank you so much, Connie Baxter Marlowe and Andrew Cameron Bailey, for joining me here to explain about the event. Once again, it's at the Third Street Center tonight at 7 p.m.
Climate Consciousness and the Indigenous Connection.
Thank you, Raleigh.
Thank you, Raleigh.